The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Hello there. Thanks for downloading Spin the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish.com. We like to think of our podcast as a forum for discussing the very latest rally news, and it's parked up alongside the Dirtfish Live Centre when that clock starts on event, and the very excellent daily delivery of top-notch coverage from the mothership, Dirtfish.com. Coming up in episode 186. We'll be previewing the next event on the WRC calendar, Rally Kenya.
I know we're off the back of one of the most demanding WRC events we've had in a long time in Sardinia, but there's no reason why this can't be the same, if not even more difficult.
Well, contrary to the forecasts and slightly disappointingly, it's not wet.
There'll be some of this. We see Robin Perra out in front again. What do the others need to do to stop him from running away with it?
Drive faster than him. Very, very simple.
We're having a chat about Hyundai's driver lineup.
You know, there is a fairly significant sized elephant in the room in the shape of Oliver Solberg.
And a bit of this.
David, don't have to call me out about my working patterns on air.
Your team today is Dirtfish.com head of media David Evans, deputy editor of Dirtfish.com Luke Barry, and on location in Kenya, former motorsport team boss and special correspondent George Donaldson. I'm your host, Lisa O'Sullivan, and it's about time we got into gear. Morning, gang. How have we got around to Rally Kenya already?
Lisa, it never comes too quickly.
How have we got around to the podcast 186 already?
I know. More fingers and toes than you could possibly imagine, David Evans.
I know. I think that's the biggest number I've ever heard. It's ridiculous. But fabulous as well at the same time. Sorry, it's quite early on a Monday morning.
It's probably a good time to point out that if you like what we're doing, you can actually go back and listen to the previous 185. If you have a little bit of time on your hands to listen back to some excellent rally talk and some slightly offbeat, off-track kind of stuff as well. But we're kind of off-road. We're out in the wilds of Kenya for the next event on the WRC calendar. And George, we've sent you ahead. How are things looking in Africa?
Well, contrary to the forecasts, and slightly disappointingly, it's not wet. The forecast tell us that it should be pouring. David, we've discussed this already offline, that we were all excited about the fact it was going to be a lovely wet safari and lots of thunderstorms. And there's the odd intermittent shower, rather like the last 2 years. So that means that we're liable to see one or two wet stages, parts of stages. We get the excitement of a couple of cars getting through dry and then other people losing 10 minutes. Nothing pleases me more than that uncertainty, David.
But there, how accurate is the forecast there, George? And, you know, there's mountains around the place, isn't there? So can weather still bubble up?
Oh, absolutely, David. Absolutely. The forecast models are... I've checked out four different weather models from the top
four,
providers.
George?
You would think. Sorry.
Why only four?
Why only four? Well, because you get bored after four because they're all the same and they're all wrong. So what I've started to do now is speak to the local rally people, and this afternoon I've hopefully got a meeting with one of my old rally friends that just lives across on the north side of the lake, Lake Naivasha, and he will be giving me the lowdown on what he thinks the weather is. And he's a farmer, so he's going to tell me, he's going to give us the truth, David.
Best.
I'll get the truth. I apologise for not having that already for this meeting, but...
You're being marked down, George.
I've been out on recce, so I've not managed to meet him until now, so it'll be today that I'll catch him, and I shall get the full lowdown.
But it's fair to say, George, that, you know, we're not in the rainy season. You know, this isn't a typically Easter African safari that we used to know, where you would get rain and rain and rain. But last 2 years, there has been enough to absolutely keep it interesting.
100%. So the rains they have at the moment are called, I think they're called the grass rains. It's small, localized showers all the time. Everything around is beautifully green, even greener than it was last year. So it's certainly wetter than it was last year. There's a lot more greenery. There's a huge amount of grassland out there. It pops up very quickly, of course. And it gets eaten just as quickly by all the wild animals, which is fabulous because they come down and eat it all and we get to see them. But at Easter time, it's actually a very dry time. And then it comes the long rains, they're called. And they last about 2 to 3 weeks maximum. And you get very big frontal storms coming in with rain that lasts for half a day. And then the rain goes away for 3 days and it's gorgeous sunshine. And it all starts to dry out, and then another belt comes in 3 days behind it. So you're just starting to recover, and you get bad. It was 5 years coming to an Easter safari before I saw a wet one. The rains failed.
So I was just going to ask that. Really? Yeah. 5 years?
Yeah, 5 years. Yeah, it was my fifth safari before I saw a wet one. And then I knew what a wet safari was. That was fabulous. Absolutely.
Is it? I mean,
amazing.
I've never seen rain, really, like proper rain out there. The safaris I've done have always been in out of season, essentially. So when it rains, I know this is now out of context because we're not at Easter time anymore, but was it the most hideous rain you've ever seen?
It's like that equatorial rain you get when you're down in Malaysia or the Far East, rainforesty rain. You know, it comes on with monotonous sort of regularity when it's being regular. I know that sounds a little bit like a misnomer, but it just all of a sudden starts to rain.
Like a gardening thing where the sprinklers come on at a set time,
more or less like that. So that year when we were wrecking, I remember sitting in my van at the end of I think it was actually the beginning of a section, and we were just over the crest of a hill and people were walking towards us and they were soaking wet. And we could see there was weather, but we didn't think it was going to come. So it was basically the crest of the hill was about 200 yards away and people were walking towards us soaking wet, dripping. They weren't leaving wet footprints because obviously they'd dried out on the road before that, but they were still dripping wet. And they said to us, oh, the rain is coming. And literally we watched the rain come down the road over the course of about half an hour, this 200 metres. And you could almost be at the back of this little high's van in the rain and the front in the dry. It was bizarre. And then it rained for about, genuinely rained for about an hour and a half. The cars were late coming. And fortunately, they didn't arrive when it rained. It was Bjorn, he arrived just after it stopped raining. And, the car, you could hardly recognise it as a Celica at that point. It was just, you know, that 2-inch thick mud all over it. You know, the thing must have weighed double the normal weight. And that's, of course, why he was late. He was an hour and a half late because we were running to our dry schedule. And, you know, he'd been away doing a 200-kilometre, or maybe a couple of 200-kilometre sections with the recce tanks, 200-litre fuel tanks in the cars. And they're not going full rally speed at that point on those old recces. They were going fast, but not full recce speed. So they had fuel to do two sections, yeah.
So just to be clear to anybody that's joining the podcast late, that's what's not going to happen this week. We're not expecting anything like that. Oh,
well, but there are big thunderstorms though. I mean, and you know, I drove up to Lake Baringo on Saturday because I had no road book yet, and as we came back down the road over the Aberdare Hills, which are famous rally hills, just to the east of the route. Those are very tall mountains that generate a lot of rainfall, and it's tropical rainforests on the east side of that and mountainous forests on the west side. The east side is apparently wetter, but the rain does come down off that, and that's what swept down. We watched it sweeping down over Elementaita last year, and the same can happen here at Naivasha. Although there is if the wind's from the southeast, it tends to come off Suswa, so down over the end of the Aberdares and across Suswa, it tends to pick up moisture off the lake and then dump it on the north side of the lake more than the south side. And the south side's where all the stages are. So apparently we're less likely to see rain in these stages, which is a big shame.
I think...
Enough of the weather.
Lise, you've got to ask Luke a question now. Because I've, having learned a little bit about Luke's working day, I'm a bit worried he might have gone back to bed.
I know. He has gone very quiet.
I know he's there.
I was going to move straight on to actually saying, Luke, what should we be looking out for in this event? So we cannot ignore the fact that Toyota have dominated rally, the Safari Rally, over the years. You've got your pen ready to go. I know that. You're poised, keyboard ready, keyboard warrior as well. What should we be gearing ourselves up for this weekend?
I'm just going to go back because very quickly say, David, don't have to call me out about my working patterns on air. That was very unkind.
No, you work long into the night.
That's it, yeah.
You do work very long into the night, but sometimes...
Sometimes not always that early in the morning. Yeah. But yeah, apologies to listeners, I am here. That was 10 minutes of me not being involved in the podcast, so sorry. So things to look out for. I mean, again, this is the beautiful thing about Safari Rally, and I know there'll be plenty of people that still maybe struggles maybe the wrong word, but it isn't quite the same challenge that it was before, but it doesn't mean that it's still not a challenge. And I know we're off the back of one of the most demanding WRC events we've had in a long time in Sardinia, but there's no reason why this can't be the same, if not even more difficult for the drivers. I think who I'm speaking to, it's rare that I get to say this, that I was speaking to somebody, but it makes me sound professional, so I'll say it. I was speaking to Lube last week, he said this very same thing. It was, anything can happen. Nobody has any idea what they can expect for this rally, so it's quite difficult in a way for us to preview that as a podcast, because in a way, you've no idea what kind of narrative or anything we're going to have. You're sort of right to mention that Toyota's record has been particularly good here, obviously historically, but also in the last couple of years when they've returned, or sorry, the events returned to WRC, they've won it the last two times. But Neuville was leading on the final day of 2021, so it's not as if Toyota have a complete whitewash on it. Last year, yes, they had that sort of dream 1-2-3-4 result, but I don't necessarily believe that any of that's going to mean that they're going to dominate this year. I think the way things are now with all three teams, I think anybody has a chance. Genuinely anybody, even on a podcast George and I did a few days ago. If you haven't listened to that, there's a little plug for you. George reckoned even Rally 2 cars could win. So I think everything is open, which is fascinating. But sorry, that wasn't a great list of things that we can necessarily jump on to talk about.
That I've got to say, that was one thing that I'd written on my notepad here to ask George about. If, I mean, yes, of course anything can happen. Of course it can. But George, we do have 9, 8, 9, 10, I can't remember exactly how many Rally 1 cars. Every one of those cars would have to have a pretty significant problem, a fairly major problem. There's no way on in terms of pure pace. You look at last year, I think it was Kajtanovic the one, he was half an hour behind.
Yeah, but I mean, Kajtanovic was taking it easy. He was 100% in survival mode. It wasn't a European push. And, you know, when I made those comments to Luke, you know, we were coming to a rally that all the forecasts were telling us it's basically going to be wet every day, and the stages will be damped down, they'll be slippery and wet. I think if the route... And, you know, we're only across... Is it 60 kilometres from the north part of the route to the south part of the route? It wouldn't take a big rainstorm to have that whole route damped down, but that's not a feature of the weather that we get here at this time, it seems. And of course, I'm not used to coming at this time of year particularly, and not really that not got that much affinity with the weather. But I think if the entire route was wet, if it was slippery and wet and a proper, you know, wet safari, I think that the R5 cars, because their pace is so close to the World Rally cars in terms of raw pace on many events, I think this would be one of them where they would get close. And again, that wet nature of the rally where one car can lose a lot of time very, very simply and easily, I think an R5 car would have had a chance to win, or would have a chance to win in that scenario.
But are they robust enough in terms of suspension? That's
probably the big factor. They don't have the physical robustness of the WRC cars that have. They are very strong, but then the WRC cars have a fragility that the R5 cars. They have a complexity that the R5 cars don't have, in that they have the hybrid system, which in fairness is pretty robust, but they've got these very complex cooling packages on the front that can pick up mud and dirt and dust. You know, one of the factors I've picked up, one of the risk factors here this year that I think is greater than last year from what I've seen in some areas, is that there's, although the roads, we can come to this later, but grass in through the radiator. You know, you could block a radiator in the first 500 or 600 meters of the first stage with grass seed, potentially.
You know? Is that more overgrown than it was last year then?
It would appear to me to be, judged from what I've seen so far. I've seen about a third of the route so far. Yeah. And in the areas where there is still the earth road with the grass in the middle, the grass is definitely longer. However, the recce goes through, the organisers go through, people like me go through to look and see, and I dare say we start to knock it down a little bit. It might not be so bad. But it's just, you know, again, you know, just with my team hat on, you're starting to measure risks and looking at things. Right, that could be an issue. And remember, you know, we were allowed to mitigate for things like that in the past. You would put a little sweeper on the front of the car. I remember doing that so that it pushed the grass down rather than broke it. You pushed it down, even at high speed. You pushed it forward, and that still allowed the air to come over the top of this little, almost like a little ski on the front of the car across the front of the radiator, just push the grass down.
What caused the fire in Sebastian Loeb's car last year? Was that something like that?
No, I'm not quite sure what caused that fire, but it was a very small overheating. It was a very small factor, and it didn't do much damage to the car, but it did exist. It must have been oil on the exhaust or something like that. A small oil leak, probably, not very much. It wouldn't have been fuel because that would have been more significant. It might just even have just been some material burning, Lisa. That was a wee bit difficult to put out, but the
cars do have minor tweaks, don't they? For Safari, we normally see more front end protection. We see, obviously, the Hyundai always runs with its lights flashing. So we do see some small things, but nothing like the snorkels and the extra protection we would have seen 20 years ago.
No. And the other bit of bad news, David, is that, just different news, that's all. So I've driven over the stages on the south side of Lake Naivasha. They've been significantly improved. So the stage called Geothermal was already a nice stage, very fast, you know, parts in it Thousand Lakes like. Nearly the whole stage is like that now. It's been altered the route very slightly, but the road has been significantly improved. And some of those improvements had to be done because the roads have been washed out by the rains that we're currently having. And of course, we've had the long rains and the short rains since the last year's safari. So the roads have been repaired. But massive improvements in Kidong on the route.
Yeah.
Only one corner with potentially some fesh on it, the dust.
So when you say massive improvements, you mean massive changes, the roads have been remodeled or resurfaced?
I think it's been remodeled, David, is the word I would use. It's the same route, for instance, but the road has been graded and widened and engineered, whereas the last 2 years we've been predominantly on earth roads with grass growing up the middle. So, you know, I heard that of disappointment. Yeah. That was my feeling, absolutely. I drove the whole of the Kidong stage at between 60 and 80 kph. We barely had to slow down, obviously for corners, etc. But, you know, on the main route where you were looking and you can see an earth bit where there'd be a big bump, it's now just flat out through it. So it's become... In many ways, this is actually a very traditional safari rally, because safari rally ran on well-engineered roads that were big and fast. That was what safari used to be. So in many ways, they're emulating that. But I think somehow they've taken it. I feel like it might have detracted a little bit from the character that we had last year. Having said that, there are still many places that are exactly the same as the last 2 years. The start of the Osirian stage... that's through the conservancy, right at the western end of Lake Naivasha.
What about Hell's Gate, though? Because that's obviously actually right next door to Keedong, isn't it? It's just literally west along that road. What's that? Because that's Power Stage.
Motorway. It's an autoroute, an autostrado, an autostrada, an autobahn. It's fast like you can't believe. The very tricky descent from the top ascent. The ascent was fixed last year. It used to be fesh. That is now absolutely beautifully engineered road. But on the way down as well, it's been topped and filled. So I don't think the fesh will come through. Although the marshals there tell me that after the recce, maybe come and have a look at it again. It might start to come back through, but it looks to me to be a very, very quick bit of road now.
What would rain do to it? Is it well engineered?
The rain on the fesh is a French term for you know, deep sand
dust.
But the fesh we get here is not like that. It's pure volcanic dust, as opposed to volcanic sand, of which there is a lot. There's black volcanic sand here as well. But the fesh apparently, when it rains on it, it firms right up, and it becomes actually even quicker to drive on than it would be at the moment. So it's even nicer. But of course, if it's properly wet, it's very, very slippery as well, which would make it fantastically interesting. So it's a double-edged sword.
Possibly we've got the conditions lined up then. So
the conditions are lined up. So God knows what can happen.
We've got the weather. We've got the route. Luke, who do you think is best positioned to move themselves up or improve their placings in the standings? Which drivers do you think are going to be best suited?
Can I say a cop out and say everyone? No, I can't.
No!
It's a good...
That's why we pay you the big bucks.
Oh, yeah, I can't really argue with that. You've completely dumbfounded me there, Lisa, actually. To be honest, I think this... Well, historically, this has always been an event where Taka Katsuta's found a bit of something. And it's kind of hard to... I say expect. I don't want to say expect. I want to put pressure on him. But I'd be surprised if he's not doing the same thing as he has done in the last couple of years, which is sort of playing himself in very sensibly, loitering around in positions and picking them up if others have problems. And I guess he's one that, to take the question very literally, he's one that's not too high in the championship just now, so he's got a good chance to sort of help himself out. But honestly, I think a good seven or eight drivers here are all in the mix. I think the only one that is a normal favourite for events, but maybe isn't quite as strong a favourite this time compared to other events, is Lappi, just because he's not been here before. But I think it'd be unfair to hold that against him necessarily, because he's surprised everybody, I think, with just how well he's adapted this year. So I don't think we can come into this assuming that he's not going to be in the fight. But potentially, if it gets to these really difficult moments, the others do have that advantage where they've been there before. Tanak's one who's done very well in this rally before, just hasn't necessarily got the result to reflect that. So I think that's interesting. I can't remember where he'll be. He'll be third. I was going to say I'm talking about role position, but to be fair, it doesn't make that big a difference here, does it, compared to others? So again, I'm talking around in circles, Lisa, because you've caught me out. But I honestly think... go on, David.
You're doing quite well, though.
David, rescue me.
I think you're dead right. I think Tanak is the one. The for me, the kind of go-to driver that can, he has that ability to drive around problems. And it's reasonably sure that on an event like this, okay, we'll take everything into consideration that George has just said about those stages to the south of Lake Navasha, but drivers will have problems. They won't have the perfect event. This is not an Estonia or a Finland. It's a very different nature event, but is it going to be as complicated as Sardinia? I don't know, but for me, Tanak is somebody who has that ability to drive around issues. And I think that Lappi will struggle because of that lack of experience. And I think almost psychologically, when you're coming to an event that is so different, and the perception of Safari is that it still is so different to anything. It's his first time competing in an African WRC round. He'll be kind of on the back foot, as much as he'll tell you that he's not. It deep in his mind somewhere there will be something that's saying they know a lot of stuff that you don't. That rock that you've seen on the recce, they knew about that. You know, there will be these voices that I'm sure will will give him some sort of self-doubt a little bit. And ultimately, when things happen to the car, you talk there, George, about, you know, the grass coming into the front. If suddenly he sees temperatures going up or down in the car, you know, the other drivers will have seen that before, maybe. So I do think there is going to be an element of that, Luke. But equally, the very fact that he's there with a Rally One car means that he stands a very good chance of winning this thing.
Yeah. I think it's a big rally for his teammate, Neuville, as well, isn't it? Because we know, I mentioned it before, a couple of years ago, he was that close to a win here. So obviously, for any driver, as much as they'll probably tell you differently, these things do sit in the back of your mind. You want to sort of settle a score. And Safari is one of those rallies that, because of its unique challenge in its history, it's a cliche, this, because every driver wants to win every rally, but this is one that I think would take particular sort of pride in the trophy cabinet. But the other thing, and he said it at the end of Sardinia in the FIA press conference, which was quite interestingly beset for an open, actually, from Thierry, that obviously he's 25 points behind Rovan Pera in the championship just now. He's the closest guy, and to be fair, I think, depending on how Tanak goes, he's potentially now the biggest threat to Cowie, given we know that he's theoretically in line for help from his teammates if he needs it as well. I think all these things add up to a very strong challenge for him, but this isn't the point, so I'll stop driving myself down a rabbit hole. But he is very open now about the fact Estonia and Finland really aren't rallies that suit him, and that's what's next after Kenya in the calendar. So he knows this weekend could be quite big for him to try and take some really good points back from Cali, because obviously it's too early to suggest or assume that Rovan Pera is going to get two good results in Estonia and Finland. But they are, as much as they're rallies that don't suit Neuville, every rally suits Rovan Pera, but these are rallies he always goes well on, as well. So that is already playing in Neuville's mind. He knows this is a rally where he obviously can't control what Rovan Pera does. That's down to Cali, but a win is quite crucial, I think, for Thierry's title bid. And I don't want to big it up too much that it sounds like it's some massive facetious headline that it's sort of make or break time, but I think it could be quite a key result, given he will probably not be at the very, very front-running pace for the next two rallies after it. So I'm interested to see if that has any impact on the way he approaches it.
I think it is a very fair point. And again, as much, I think there's an almost a psychological element now with Thierry in places like Estonia and Finland, because when he first landed there 10 years ago, he was unbelievably quick in Finland. So that'll be really interesting. The other point, the point you made about Thierry leading Safari before, that it was 21 when he damaged the suspension on, I think it was on the second stage on a Sunday morning. Massive frustration for him. But from memory back then, he'd led for a long time, but he hadn't, you know, got up and run away with it. He was still very, very close with Taka-san, wasn't he, back then? Because there was all of that debate in 21 about could Taka actually win this thing, or, you know, what would they do? And yeah, there was a huge fight.
He led for one stage, I think, David, didn't he?
Yeah, and then, pure pace, Ogier was always going to come through and win. But, yeah, it is a very interesting one. Like you say, Luke, I think even though it is a watered-down Safari compared to what it was all those years ago, it's still a huge trophy to have in a cabinet.
It is absolutely massive.
Yeah, we're slap bang in the middle of the season, which does make it, I mean, all the drivers and stuff will always say we're just focusing on the next event. We are just focusing on the next event. But the overall picture is always interesting when you get to the midpoint of the season, and we're moving, as you say, we've got two very fast events to follow after this, and that favours certain drivers over others. David, when we are midpoint of the season, what kind of assessments can we make about what the teams have achieved so far and what they still need to do, both from a manufacturer's point of view and from an individual driver's point of view, to actually push on through? We see Rovan Pera out in front again. What do the others need to do to stop him from running away with it?
Drive faster than him. Very, very simple. Now, I think, you know, you're right, Lise. We do get to that midpoint of the season where there is a lot of questions to ask. But if you... A snapshot of this thing, if you go back to events, obviously Calais had two really strong events in Portugal and Sardinia. Go back to Croatia, everybody, absolutely everybody was in the mix. I can't remember, but there was something like four or five drivers within 10 points of each other. The thing has turned around completely. And the really interesting point is as well, if you take Sardinia now, you now suddenly, after Sardinia, you begin to ask questions about water splashes because of the way that Toyota had three issues with three cars. But that's it was a very small element. And it was a very localized issue with very deep water splashes. We're probably, from what George said, we're not going to see those again this week in Safari. So there have been some kind of, it feels wrong to call them sort of localized issues, but there have been those issues which have sort of spiked elements of the team's defenses or whatever. We haven't had a bunch of typical rallies in the last couple, I don't think. So my point is, go back two rounds to Croatia and anything could happen. And I absolutely believe that anything can happen moving forward. Calais is 25 points out front. It's a big lead that's very... If you're sitting in second place looking at a mountain of 25 points above you, it looks like a huge, huge gap. Ultimately, it's not. It's a single retirement and everybody is back in the game. That's my feeling is that, yes, yeah, Calais is out front. But there's an awful lot to come in the second half of this year. If Calais gets some points, gets good points in Kenya, and then goes and walks away with Estonia and Finland, which, let's be honest, he has the capability. Okay, walk away is a little bit strong because, you know, people like Oit Tanak is unbelievably strong, and Tanak will be motivated like you won't believe he's always hugely motivated, but to win at home in Estonia in an M Sport car would mean so much to him. And he knows that he needs two big rallies in Estonia and Finland to bring his championship back online. If Tanak can't put those two results together, and he struggles a bit in Kenya, and Calais does have really strong results here, then it could be difficult. But, you know, there's still... We really can't forget that there's people like Elvin Evans who is just there. Okay, he's not quite as close to Calais, but he's by no means is Elvin out of this, and he's won. He's won in Finland. He's certainly got the pace. He had a big accident in Estonia a few years ago, but he's got fast rally pace. There's still plenty going on in this championship.
Yeah, I mean, and also David, for me, the one of the biggest things here is when you look at the way drivers have been driving this event the last few years. For me, one of the biggest dark horses that's not managed to show his performance properly is Oit Tanak. Oit Tanak put in a winning drive the last 2 years. He categorically drove this event more or less perfectly. And so if I was a young driver like Mr. Luby, I would be hanging off Oit's shirt tails and asking him every question I can, because he drove this event perfectly. And what's really strange for me when I say this now, and I don't want any Thierry fans to hate me for this comment, so please don't, but Thierry for me drove this event too fast both years. And I remember even maybe commenting about it in the reports that I sent in to folks. I mean, I was trying to be, you know, honest and fair about what my thoughts were. I mean, he drove beautifully. He drove absolutely beautifully. And I mean, he basically confounded my thoughts at the time, except for, you know, in 2021, he knocked a wheel off in the Lauldea stage. However, that was just after a little stage that's across the road that was unbelievably rough and very, very rockery. Actually, it was one of the few places where you went over proper rockeries, and it was a very narrow road. I haven't driven it yet this year, but the nature of it is that I don't think it'll have changed very, very much at all. So, no, did he damage his car in that stage? Because he never hit anything in the Lauldea stage, and I believe that he didn't hit anything in the Lauldea stage. And in fairness to Thierry, and to allay all the hate mail that we might get for me saying this, is that across the road, I believe he probably didn't hit anything over the road either. It's just it was so rough. I think it took the toll on the car. Even though it would feel okay in the car to Thierry, I think ultimately, and it's not a criticism of him in any way, I think ultimately he just took a little bit too much out of the car and the car failed just before the finish. And I remember I was standing there with him when he retired, and he was protesting to his engineer saying, "How is this broken? I'm looking at the upright, it's just cracked." The whole thing had fractured away. There was no sign of an impact on the wheel. Thierry hadn't touched the thing, but the upright had cracked. And that's, for me, typical of just sort of fatigue damage. And had he pushed the car too hard, that part had stayed on the car from the previous day, but it had been taken off, inspected and put back on. And eventually it just took too much damage in that previous stage. It was a very, very hard stage, the previous stage just across the road. I forget the name of that little stage.
That's the point though, isn't it, George, that, you know, you can't look at these stages in isolation.
Judgment. You cannot. You can, exactly that, David. You know, he didn't put a foot wrong, but what he did was he just took a little bit out of the car, a little bit too much out of the car. Somehow, yeah. You know, and I mean, that's, again, how do you prevent that? I don't know how to prevent it, you know, and so this is not a criticism of the driver. It's just a comment on what this event will do to a car. And and for me, it somehow made it turned it into a safari rally. Well, there you go. There's what happens, yeah. Sort of thing. It couldn't have happened to a worse guy, because I think Thierry had actually, at that stage, I'd actually come to the point thinking, well, he's confined. I know he's got a couple of stages to go, but he's confounded me completely because he's doing such a great job. And then, yeah, bang, the car broke, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's still got that ability. And you've got to love this event for that.
Thierry will be fast here, yeah?
The fact that you've still got to drive with a little bit in reserve. You know, it's going to be so interesting, George, and I'd love to talk to you again after you've driven those roads to the north and the other stages away from the south of the lake, because this safari does still need that ability to bring you down to your, you know, I remember talking to Nicky Grist when Gristy first got in the car with Colin, and they couldn't work out how to slow the notes enough. And in the end, Nick said, we used the word stop. And it was literally that, stop the car, stop, and then go into first gear and then drop the nose down into what, because, you know, for a driver, they're always looking to push that little bit more. Yeah. And that one word was all it needed. Yeah. It changed it, you know, it focused the mind.
The other risk that underlines your point there, David, is that, you know, well, we've looked at some of the big stages, obviously, to the south of the lake. That's the Osirian stage at 20Ks. Not changed too much from last year. That was the one where Kalle Rovanperä retired in 21, you know, he got stuck basically. And the Kidong, the big long stage, the 30 kilometer stage.
Yeah.
That's the Kidong stage has just been turned into a motorway to my mind. It's been graded and they've added material in, but that material can come out. These are powerful cars, and there are places where they'll be going incredibly fast, but there's also places where they slow down and then have to accelerate. And there are some technical sections in there.
That can kill the road surface. Yeah,
you're going around very blind corners and tight technical places with ungraded roads, which will have big hardcore in, and then they've got some soft fines on top. But you come around that corner, you need to be able to move the car around a little bit. You need to keep that in reserve. The pace will be such, as usual, that you don't do that. And we will see punctures, and we will see, you know, problems. And people maybe just getting lifted off into the bushes a little bit and losing a wee bit bodywork, maybe losing a little bit of time, maybe even stopping. There'll be a bit of that going on. But I will certainly relay the northern stages to you.
And it's the ones tomorrow up towards Nakuru, isn't it? The Sleeping Warrior and Asori Sambu.
So Elementaita. Yeah, Sleeping Warrior is the big one up there.
When are you looking at those, George?
I'm looking at those possibly this afternoon, certainly tomorrow. I was going to try and get them done today so that when our full team arrives, I can then guide them to whatever area suits their plans for creating our programming.
Just to reiterate, it's Monday today. So if you're listening to this later in the week, which you will be, we'll put that into context. I'm just going to stick a pin in the Safari Rally at the moment. You will be able to keep in touch with everything that's happening on the Dirtfish Live Centre when the event gets underway this weekend. It's a great way to follow the rally while it's underway. Can we talk, Luke, about Hyundai and the addition to their driver lineup?
Yes.
Tamo sooner next. Yes, you sounded far more confident there.
I did for once, yeah.
Emil Lindholm and Tamo Sunonen.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And to be fair, I actually don't know if anybody has anything massive to say in a way, because in some ways it's exactly what we expected, isn't it? I think David had done the digging and found out that Tamo was close to the drive. And then once you think about it logically, I know this, I've seen some people suggesting it's quite a safe bet and all the rest of it, but he was already in the team. He's a known quantity for these rallies he's been selected for at the minute, Estonia and Finland, for context, if anybody isn't aware. And I think the rest of the programme is sort of to be confirmed. But they're just the rallies he's always gone well on. The rallies that, and it's a stereotype, but Finns always do well in these kind of events. Sunonen has always done well on these two events. So for a chance to drive the Rally 1 car, that's the perfect way to do it. And he's the perfect guy to bring in to potentially help get a good result. I think the interesting part of it is the fact they're sort of relaunching this driver development program, which they had back in the day. And I'm sure it was Jari Huttunen, wasn't it, who was like the first inductee of that scheme, which never fully quite worked out for him for a variety of reasons. But Emil Lindholm in there is an interesting one. What happens there in terms of, does he drive a Rally 1 car this year? Are they looking at it next year? Has he got any guarantee of driving that car at all? These are questions we don't know yet, but that's kind of almost what I'm most interested in now, is where does that go and how does it fit with Sunonen? I know David wrote something on the website, which you can obviously go back and check, but having Sunonen as a sort of development driver, it's obviously by name, but it seems a bit odd in a way, doesn't it? Because he's not a driver that's yes, he's got things he could probably theoretically improve on, but you can say that about everybody. He's not a driver that unearthed from no experience or anything. He's got, I think, 3 or 4 podiums in WRC. He's won several stages. He's led rallies. He's a driver getting another chance, but he's not a driver being picked up to develop, if that makes sense. So that's all a bit sort of strange in a way. But I am quite happy for Lindholm, though, because I think it's a nice shot, actually, for belief in the fact that WRC2 will get you places, because he obviously won that championship last year. And I think the way, with the lack of sort of top line drives available, there was a genuine fear that you win that championship and actually, is it going to get you where it theoretically should? And at the minute, obviously, there's no guarantee, but this is like a positive step towards that. So I think that's quite good, actually, for the WRC as a whole. But yeah, I've been rambling on again on a bit of a solo mission, as I can do.
You could look at it and say, as you said there, Luke, it is a bizarre thing to call it as a driver development program. It's odd. Sunonen, I guess he is somebody for me who will get in and
Why do you think it's odd? Is it just an age thing?
Just because, yeah, it is, and they're very careful that it, you know, the word junior or young driver isn't in there. But it is referenced within the company that this is their junior driver program. Lindholm is a young driver, but my point that I made in the piece is that if it's genuine driver development, they need to move Lindholm up into a Rally 1 car because he is our defending WRC 2 champion. I think we can take it as read that he's reasonably well developed in a Rally 2 car. My feeling is there's no doubt Tamu can get in a car and he can do a great job. We're talking more extensively with Tamu, excuse me, today, and you'll be able to read his thoughts.
Ooh, good.
And he does have some very specific thoughts that by no means is this an easy task to get into a World Rally car. And I, again, referenced this when I was writing my piece last week, when he drove in 17 and he finished, I think it was 6th in Poland and then 4th in Finland, hit his first two ever outings in a WRC car. It was pretty incredible. But those cars were very, very different. You know, that was just raw pace. It was all internal combustion. There was a lot more aero in the cars than what Tamu would ever have found before. Now, these Rally 1 cars are very, very different cars to drive. And Tamu's done a couple of days in them. And he himself has already said, it's very difficult to understand how the hybrid works with ice. Not difficult to understand at all.
Well, that's where the driver development comes in, isn't it, really? I think that we also forget with this sport quite how elite it is that we have are very, very few individuals who get to drive these cars at the very top level. And while they're coming through, because Tamo, he's 29, isn't he? So he yeah. feels like he's been around forever. And yet he still feels like he hasn't really had, you know, he still feels, junior's the wrong word, as you say, but we have a lot of talent that never gets the chance to take on the bigger cars, the Rally One cars, because there aren't enough of them around, because the budgets aren't big enough. We don't have massive fields in Rally One. So the drivers do need to have some kind of development, whatever their age, because the cars have changed by the time they get back into them.
That, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head maybe early in that point there, at least, that it is about driver development. So, yeah, actually, they've got it dead right, because moving up to the Rally One car will develop Tamu as a driver. I think it's just interesting that they've taken a Finn and they've named a Finn that lives in Estonia to drive in Estonia and in Finland. For me, if it was a genuine driver development program, they would have named him also for a tarmac rally, because you need to understand how these cars work on tarmac, and maybe put him in a very different style of gravel rally. So put him in for Acropolis, where he's going to be driving
a driver development light program, basically.
or is it a stopgap to put a Finn in to potentially bring them some points where, well, yes, they've got Lappi and they will want Lappi. You know, these are the two events, Estonia, Finland, where they are not, I would imagine they're not going to be able to say, right, listen here, EP, you're going to have to slow down for Thierry, because recent history has shown that Thierry could be quite a long way back. I'm not saying he will be, but he might be. And you would expect naturally to see EP, a former Rally Finland winner, right up at the front. So are they giving EP this opportunity and saying, go, off you go, you're off the leash, get on with it. And then they've got Tamu in there who can potentially be the safety net for points. I don't know. It all seems a tiny bit strange. And, you know, there is a fairly significant sized elephant in the room in the shape of Oliver Solberg, you know, a former Hyundai employee, somebody who knew the car, knew the team, and could have come back in and done a very good job for them. I'm not saying that Emil and Tamu won't. Excuse me, sorry. I think he will. But if you're genuinely looking at the long term, Oliver Solberg is what? He's 21 years old. He's considerably younger than both of those guys. And he's the driver that everybody's talking about. I don't really understand how they've overlooked him.
Yeah. That's a great point to make, David, because, you know, Oliver's come and absolutely been the to my mind, he's been the pace setter, and I think everybody's mind would see the same this year, which surprised me because I thought he would have been beaten to death after his year at Hyundai last year. Yeah. And that certainly wasn't much of a driver development program in the end. It certainly didn't work. And obviously from their own point of view, they're looking for championships, so they can't overindulge in that. So they decided to let it go. But they're now pulling in two drivers that, quite frankly, are barely the pace, or, you know, well, that's not fair to say that. They are only the pace of Oliver. They're not significantly better. You know, what's the definition of not very clever, David? Doing the same thing again and again and expecting a different result. It's not much different from that, isn't it?
Exactly.
But that's actually it.
I get that. It's a tough one. It is.
I think what they're doing is pretty smart, I think. And I think bringing Timo in for those events, smart. The guy might well deliver if he's hungry enough, if he's focused enough. He's certainly demonstrated pace in the past enough. His survivability in and out of ditches in Finland. I still remember that video where he goes down in a ditch, stays down there and pops back out like nothing's happened. What was it, 2-3 or 4 years ago in the World Rally Car? His survivability is good, so that's a smart, proper team decision to get the best for the team. Don't disguise it as if you're developing a driver. It's not about that. These teams are not magnanimous creatures trying to develop drivers for their own benefit. They're trying to win championships. They'll develop a driver for their own benefit.
Mm.
And I think that's where it stops.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I know we are getting to the end here, Lise, but just before we dive off, I did want to just mention, completely outside of Safari and outside of WRC, Martin Sesks winning at the weekend, winning Latvia, back-to-back wins in the European Championship.
This is ERC,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, wow. Pretty incredible result for him. Hayden Padden, obviously second and still out there with a very strong lead in the championship. But just for Sesks, that was, Luke, I mean, what did you think? That was a great win for me.
It was the first stage, wasn't it? I think he did everyone by about 16 seconds, yeah. Which is just mental enough anyway. But on a rally as quick as that, it's something. But in a way, it was to be expected because he won every single stage last year. He literally comes from the sort of the... What's the phrase I'm looking for? The rally's base in Liepāja. So I'm not taking anything away from that. I shouldn't be misconstrued as a sort of detriment to his performance. He still has to drive the car. But of all rallies for him to turn up and do this, like, I was personally actually more impressed by his win in Poland last month than this one. Because this one I just kind of saw coming. But the interesting thing for me now is, what does he do in the next round in Scandinavia, which is another quick rally? Are we going to get another swashbuckling rally leading, rally winning performance? Or is it going to... And that's the question he maybe has to answer now, is there will be people that look at this and think, okay, this is great, great speed, but what you don't want to become known as is the guy that can only win one rally. Or two, actually, so you can't be called that anyway. So that's unfair to even suggest that stuff. Sorry, Martins. But yeah, it was a big...
No, that was my next point, was actually now we'll see... You know, when he comes outside of those, you know, Poland and Latvia are reasonably similar, okay, slightly different surfaces, but quite similar nature of stages. And Sweden, again, is very, very fast roads. But for me, this is the real interest now, is to see, hopefully we're going to see Oliver Solberg competing in that event at a Karlstad. And that's a genuine test of where Sesks is. In terms of his career development, I think it's hard now to measure him against someone like Padden, because Hayden has already probably moved into a championship mode where he's not going to be taking the ultimate risks. When he's sitting on a 30-point lead or something,
yeah,
he has to drive sensibly. And it'd be wicked to see someone like Oliver out there, because he will be a perfect barometer, won't he?
Yes, he will. Everybody still there?
Yeah, we're still here.
I'm still here, Lisa. We seem to have dropped that there.
Very quiet.
Yeah. Died there, yeah. Well,
it was a good full stop there.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're kind of all geared up now. George needs to go and get his jungle formula insect repellent in place and get his camera set for more pictures of giraffes. I've enjoyed those so much so far, George.
I've got lots of those. I've got lots more of those, but I shall send you more. I shall definitely send you more.
Definitely seems to be plenty on there. Thank you, Luke. Thank you, David. That is it for episode 186. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends as you like and subscribe to ensure that you get our review episode for the Safari Rally, which is going to be around about this time next week. And remember, you must go to dirtfish.com for all your essential daily rally news.